Do you need help protecting your finances as you enter retirement? David Dickens of KC Financial Advisors has got you covered. Welcome to the Cover Your Assets KC podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the podcast. This is the Cover Your Assets KC podcast. Walter Storholt and David Dickens helping you plan for your financial and retirement future. I'll drive the bus on today's show, but as always, we turn to David, the president and wealth advisor of KC Financial Advisors, for the guidance and the advice. And we've got some good things to talk about on today's edition of the show, answering some of your questions, another mailbag edition of Cover Your Assets. So I'm looking forward to this. You can find past episodes of the show and much more information online at CoverYourAssetsKC.com. Now, I've got four listener questions to throw your direction today. We've changed the names to protect the innocent on today's program, but have some good questions to toss your direction. We're going to cover a couple of different angles, from talking about ex-husband's Social Security, long-term care policies, worries about the market, and a couple of other things we'll get into. So just for the fun of it, why don't we make today's first question from, we're going to change the name to David. So David asking David this question. My father-in-law recently passed away and left us some money we weren't expecting. We don't need it and want to give it to our son, who could really use it. But I'm nervous that he'll just blow it all on a Camaro and that'll be the end of it. Do you have any suggestions for how to handle the situation?
Well, that's a really good question, David. And I think you're wise for considering it up front before you distribute money. Now, of course, we have no idea how old your son is or how much money we're talking about. But here are a couple of things that I have learned over my history, some of which having nothing to do with KC Financial Advisors. But in structuring incentive packages for employees and et cetera, for being a father of three daughters, I've learned very clearly that most people will do exactly what they're incentivized to do. So to your question, David, I have seen parents and employers and whatever incentivize their people, in this case, your son, to do certain things that are important to you that you believe are in his best interest. So, for instance, I've seen parents in this, or sometimes grandparents in this situation, who would say, "You want a Camaro? That's awesome. With the money that we received from your grandfather, we're going to match dollar for dollar every penny that you save for your new Camaro." And in that way, son is incentivized to, if he doesn't have a job, get a job. Second of all, save a bunch of what he is earning to buy something that he really, really wants. So instead of just getting that car, he is invested in buying that car. I've seen other grandparents that say, "You know what? On your birthday, every year for the next 10 years, we're going to give you this amount of money." And that way the kid receives it over time, and there's not this big pot of money that they go and blow on something. I have seen incentive packages, so to speak, where the kid is paid to stay in school. Sometimes they're paid for grades. I've heard parents say, "I would never pay for grades." I've had other people say, "We had great success paying for grades." But maybe you say, "You know what? We'll pay for A's and B's." Maybe your kid is not particularly gifted and you pay for B's and C's. That's an individual decision. But if you want to incentivize more homework being done, maybe you pay for grades. And then one other idea, David, maybe your son is out of high school, maybe out of college, he's employed. And what you might do is use that money to reimburse him for what he puts into his IRA or his 401k or his Roth. So that if his thought is, "Gosh, I just don't have enough money to put away for retirement yet." Well, you fund that, but only for the money that he's putting in himself. A lot of different ways to do it. David, I think what you really have here is a terrific teaching opportunity. And all of us parents are always looking for teaching opportunities. So it's probably a great discussion starter for you, your wife and your son, or you and your son, or whoever, whatever your family dynamics are. But I think it's an awesome opportunity for you to go in a little bit deeper with your son about financial topics and helping him understand that goal setting can be really, really important, even when you're in your, maybe especially when you're in your 20s and 30s. If you want to get to where you're going, start learning to set goals for yourself today.
That's a great point. Yeah, use this as a teach how to fish moment instead of just giving the fish away. That's a great way to look at it. Great question, David. Thanks for sending that one in. By the way, if you want to submit a question to be featured on a future show, we always invite that. You can go to coveryourassetskc.com and use the contact link to get in touch with us. Here's our next question. It comes to us from Sally. Sally says, I just heard that I can get half of my ex-husband's Social Security benefit. Is that true? Can I really take half of it away from him?
Okay, so
I feel
so
like Sally carefully worded that question.
She did. There was a little glee in that.
There was a little tinge of something there, yes.
So, Sally, the answer is basically that's true, sort of. So here's what happens. You can benefit from your husband's Social Security amount. He still gets his full benefit. And frankly, if he has a second wife, she still gets her spousal benefit. But the rules say that you, as the ex-spouse, can also get a spousal benefit off of your ex-husband's work record. And that can be really, really important to a lot of ex-spouses. So here are the ifs involved. You had to be married to him for at least 10 years. Number two, you have to be currently unmarried. And number three, you've got to be older than 62. And then, as long as he is of retirement age, you can collect your spousal benefit off of his earnings record. So how much is that? Well, if you're at your full retirement age, then you get 50% of whatever his Social Security benefit is. So that can be a big chunk of change. If your benefit based on your earning record is higher, well, then you take the higher dollar amount. But if maybe you were a stay-at-home mom and your job was raising kids, then that 50% of his benefit could be a significant amount of money and you get it. And that happens all across America. There's no big trick to getting it. You just have to apply for it and prove that you were married for at least 10 years to him and that you're currently unmarried and you're older than 62. I did find, and if you have a pencil, Sally, or frankly, anybody else who is in a situation where they are divorced, but they were married more than 10 years. If you Google Social Security, What Every Woman Should Know, there's a really good little pamphlet that the Social Security Administration actually puts out. And I think you would find it really, really beneficial to Google that and read that pamphlet. And then the last little thing is, it's what every woman should know, but frankly, Social Security it's not gender specific. If you had a wife who was a big earner and you were a stay-at-home dad, well, it's the exact same benefit for males as it is for females. So if you're a male in this situation, you still have to Google Social Security, what every woman should know, but it's about you too.
That's a great point, David. And we can even link to that in the description of today's show to make it easy for folks to find. So
I knew you could do that, Walter. I'm glad you thought of that.
Check the show notes. We'll put a link to direct you right there so you can access that. That's pretty cool. So interesting question, Sally. You may have said this, David, and I apologize if you did. Does it actually take away half from the husband, or is she just tapping into the government saying your allotment will be 50% of the ex-husband's Social Security benefit, or is it more like an alimony kind of thing where it literally is taking away from his benefit?
Nope. He still gets his full benefit.
Okay.
And if he's remarried, his wife gets her spousal benefit off of his earnings record. But it's, so all you're doing is getting the spousal benefit you would have gotten if you had remained married to him. So everybody's still getting their full amount of money. It's just extra money for you.
So Sally, both good news for you that you can get half of his Social Security benefit. Bad news that you're not taking it away from it, though, it sounds like, perhaps. Just having some fun with the way you worded the question there, Sally. But yeah, it kind of at least helps you without hurting him in a way, which is good. Great question, Sally. I know Social Security comes with a lot of nuances, so that's definitely a good one to ask. And I can see, David, how that could quickly get a little bit crazier if they had an age difference in the marriage as well, and one's not 62, the other is, or you know, somewhere depending on those brackets and age ranges and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. I've had clients, a client who came in, and she was actually older than her ex-husband, and they had been married more than 10 years. So even though she was a full retirement age, he wasn't. So there's some nuances involved. I guess the real answer is, if it gets a little bit complicated, just go see someone like me who can help you work through all of the details. But there are benefits available, and you should have them.
Sally or anybody else who wants to talk to David about these kinds of things, you can do so by calling 913-317-1414, 913-317-1414, or online, of course, at coveryourassetskc.com. Ian has our next question on the show. Ian says, my long-term care policy says it will pay out a maximum of $250,000 during my lifetime. Is that enough coverage?
So, Ian, that's certainly a good question. The answer is we don't know. But here's I went through this a real similar exercise with a client about a month ago. So here's what we talked about then. Coverage for, if you're in a nursing home in Kansas or Missouri, you're going to spend about $80,000 a year. So $80,000 a year on a $250,000 maximum means that will cover you for about a little more than 3 years. 3 years and 2 months, maybe. So the answer is, well, maybe it's enough and maybe it isn't. If you end up with a memory, like an Alzheimer's or dementia or something, you're likely to need more than 3 years of care. On average, people who go into nursing care without a dementia or Alzheimer's ailment, it is probably going to be enough. I think it's about 2.5 or 2.75 years that people tend to spend on average in that kind of long-term nursing care. But here's the thing, Ian, I don't know how old you are, but you may not need that care for maybe 10 or 20 years. If you're 65, you may not need it till you're 80 or 85. If inflation of long-term care costs is 6% a year, and this is 2020, then by 2032, 12 years from now, it's not going to cost $80,000 anymore. It's going to cost $160,000 a year. So, Ian, what I want you to do is go and look at that policy and see, does it have some sort of inflation rider, some sort of inflation-based increase that makes that $250,000 maximum go up each year? Now, a lot of the policies I see do have that, but most of them don't have 5 or 6% a year. So your policy is likely to increase, but it's likely not going to keep up with the inflation rate of long-term care. So the takeaway is you really need to understand your policy and what it costs for you to maybe have care here in the Midwest. $80,000, if you needed it tomorrow, is probably going to be a good amount if you've got $250,000 of coverage. 10 or 15 years from now, it's probably going to be a little bit light. But check out your policy and get some good advice on that to see if it's not enough, Ian, what steps can you take today? If you don't have peace of mind over that situation, well, what can you do today to get some additional peace of mind? I know we've done a podcast sometime over the last year about three different ways to cover long-term care expenses. You might just take an opportunity to go back and listen to that one as well.
You know what I'm going to do, David?
I know what you're going to do, Walter. You're going to put a link to that past podcast in the show notes.
You got it. We will. Absolutely. So if you want to reference that for some more guidance there, Ian, or somebody in a similar spot or with similar questions, we'll direct you to where you can certainly find that previous episode. So just check the link in the show notes, and we'll get you right over there. Great question. Thanks, Ian, for sending that one in to us. Again, coveryourassetskc.com, where you can submit questions to the show. Last one of the episode comes to us from Ralph. Ralph says, I never worried too much about the market when I was working, but now that I'm retired, my stomach is in knots every time the Dow has a bad day. Should I just move everything to cash so that I don't worry so much?
Okay, so Ralph, that is a super question because we are in an extended period of pretty high historic volatility.
And it's only going to get worse the next few weeks.
It's probably only going to get worse because we have a little presidential election coming up that's probably not going to be firmly decided on November 3rd. So, Ralph, I would say this. You said the phrase tied in knots. Your stomach is tied in knots. And what that tells me is you have too much risk in your portfolio. But the right amount of risk probably is not zero for you. So I wouldn't take the whole thing to cash. You said, should I just move everything to cash? And I'd say, probably not. That might be the strategy for you, but I'll bet it isn't. I'll bet it's just reducing the amount of risk you have, because on up days, when the market's up, you're probably reasonably happy that you have money in the market. And studies have shown that people are pretty darn happy when the market goes up, but a lot of people are devastated when it goes down. And you just want to not be devastated. So you probably do need to lighten the load. There are some good investment alternatives that are lower risk. So what you'd want to look at are maybe some bank deposits. In this case, probably CDs. They don't yield much, okay, but they can't go down in value. So it's a trade-off. You could look at short-term, and by that I mean 3 to 5 year government and corporate bonds. You can do that through exchange-traded funds, ETFs. You can do it through mutual funds. You don't have to buy individual bonds. We've done a couple episodes on annuities. There are some pretty good short-term fixed annuities. Fixed rate, fixed term. You put money in, you get money out when it matures, and they pay a pretty good rate, usually a percent or two above what a bank CD offers. If you want a little bit longer, you can have a fixed indexed annuity, which was also explained in that podcast. So there are alternatives, Ralph, for having things that are lower risk, but not out of the market. And I don't think that cash is going to be your best alternative. Then again, Ralph, I don't know you, and so this is not a recommendation. In fact, nothing, you guys, listeners know this, nothing that we're saying today is a recommendation specifically for you. What I'm trying to give is for people like Ralph, just some hopefully some really good direction as to things you ought to think about as you're trying to reduce your risk, but probably not go to cash and totally sit the thing out. So Ralph, if we can help you, we'd love to do that. But whatever you do, I just encourage you to get some really good professional advice, hopefully from a fiduciary who is legally required to have your best interest at heart. So good luck with that. Walter, these were 4 really good questions, and hopefully our listeners found 1 or 2 of them that were particularly relevant to them.
I always like covering these questions because we get to cover a lot of ground, and we did talk a lot about long-term care today, planning for the future, safety versus risk, social security, and even inheritances and dealing with money in the next generation and talking about some of those challenges. Lots of good stuff was on the docket today, and enjoyed your responses to those things, David. Again, you heard us say before to some of the resources and things that we mentioned on today's show. Be sure to check the show notes for links to those items so that you can get some additional education and learning opportunities there. Everything is also online at coveryourassetskc.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app, access additional episodes on the website, get to know David a little bit more through the show there. You can also call if you have any questions, 913-317-1414, and that'll take you straight to the team at KC Financial Advisors so you can set up a time to chat a little bit more about what might be on your mind. David, thank you for the help, and we'll look forward to another good show with you next week.
Yeah, I'll look forward to that as well. Thanks, Walter.
All right, thank you so much. That's David Dickens. I'm Walter Storholt. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time on Cover Your Assets KC.
Investment advisory services offered through Brookstone Capital Management, LLC, BCM, a registered investment advisor. BCM and KC Financial Advisors are independent of each other.